This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful golf courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison and Milwaukee. The semi-private golf club's grand opening will be June 20th. Find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. We welcome you into Talking.Golf, Rob Hernandez, alongside Gary D'Amato. Gary, the weather not exactly conducive to playing golf, especially in certain parts of the state of Wisconsin over the weekend, where we saw that four-letter word that we just seem to be seeing in May every year now, 3 years in a row, the S word, snow.
Yeah, we had some snow in Caledonia, where I live, Rob. It didn't stick, of course, but it was disconcerting and disappointing to see those giant snowflakes in the air. But I saw a weather report that 30 years ago, May 10th, 1990, there was an 8-inch snowfall in the Milwaukee area. So I guess we can be thankful for something.
Well, at least it's providing moisture to the courses. We'll give it that. And like you said, it's not going to hang around long. And it allowed at least one golf range the opportunity to, provide an opportunity that wouldn't have been there during a good weather day. And give some, the golfers an opportunity to do something, that wouldn't require being out in the elements for 4 hours. Gastro's Golf Center in the Milwaukee area down at Oak Creek near you opened on Saturday. They kind of took a different interpretation of the turn the dial latest order from Governor Tony Evers and decided to open. Were you surprised at that?
I was surprised. Yeah. Steve Gastro, the owner of Gastro's Golf Center on Rawson Avenue in Oak Creek, opened up. He interpreted the order, there's some wording in there about rental of recreational equipment, such as golf carts, which is what enabled golf carts to get back out on courses, kayaks, and, the like. He said, at our golf range, we rent spaces on our mats and we rent golf balls. So we're renting recreational equipment. The golfers bring their own clubs, 99% of the cases. So he said, we're just renting equipment like these other companies, so we should be able to open. And I visited his range he opened at 9 a.m. Saturday. I visited the range about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and there were half a dozen golfers there, six or eight cars in the parking lot. And Steve Gastro was a little worried that, someone would drive by and see, because a lot of people have sort of turned into the self-policing thing where they're calling in their friends and neighbors for disobeying the order. And he was worried someone was going to call the police and say that he had, golfers. But, it's as safe hitting golf balls at a range, in my opinion, as it is playing on a golf course. I don't see much difference in either one.
Well, and certainly the picture that you took of the gentleman from the Chicago area that came up illustrates that. I mean, at Gastro's and a lot of golf centers around the state that are, driving range only, they're constructed for that purpose. There's a lot of teaching that goes on here, so you're seeing partitions. They take the extra measure because you're dealing with many times beginners, and you don't want that golf ball to go flying off the end of the hosel, as it were, one way or the other. And this looks like a perfectly safe environment to hit golf balls. And I hope for Steve's sake that he got the turnout he did. I applaud him. I think there's a lot of businesses out there, Gary, who are having a hard time staying patient. And I think I would put driving ranges at the top of the list. They've watched golf courses open now for the last 3 weeks, and they would like to be open themselves. You wrote about Bob Burns last week. That was kind of the extreme. But, everyone needs to make money. And we've talked about this before. This is the time of year where ranges, especially as people are trying to work out the rust and the kinks, this is when they make their bread.
Exactly, Rob. And just a little update on the Bob Burns range up in Appleton. He has turned his target greens on the range into a par 3 course. So he's had some golfers go out, you know, $5 to play a little par three course that he sort of hastily invented. Children play for free, and at least he's getting a little bit of revenue coming in. When I was at Gastro's range, he mentioned that Romo had opened his range at Ives Grove, so I drove down there and met Pete Idle, the PGA professional at Ives Grove, who happened to be standing outside the range building, and it was closed. And he said, no, we haven't opened yet, but, you know, we're thinking about it. We want to be very careful. We're kind of watching what's going on at Gastro's to see what happens with him. But so ranges are, I think I've heard that a few more have opened around the state, but by and large, they're closed and supposedly are supposed to be closed, unless you interpret this wording to be the way that Steve Gastro did. So it's confusing, Rob.
It is, and it's as we record this, it's May 11th. I think the latest order goes through May 24th, and then we'll see how the various phases of the Badger bounce back are implemented and what it officially means. But, again, I think another, basically 14 days is a long time to wait to try to get ranges open. By that point, the damage may be done. Some may close. I don't have a problem with this. The other thing is, there's far greater issues here, Gary, that government officials need to deal with than whether driving ranges should be open. And again, if you're using common sense and, we're not sitting there and trying to police the 83rd item in a, 100 item safer at home edict, I don't have any problem with this. I just think it's time for at least the business of golf to be, somewhat back to normal as much as it can. And this is one big thing that needs to be checked off the list.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. There's some things obviously we have to be very careful about. And there's some things I think that can open and be safe as can possibly be when you're still outside your home. And I think driving ranges fit the bill, as do golf courses.
Well, and again, we got to be grateful too for the way that golf has kind of eased its way back into operation here in Wisconsin. I know you were on the radio over the weekend with our friend Rory Spears down in Chicago, and they're still buzzing about the calamity that is golf down there. I mean, you've got the state of Illinois saying it's okay to golf, and then you've got the city of Chicago shutting down courses. It's got to be, just really frustrating to golfers down there that, they're to the point now where they're almost better off driving across the border to play because they know they'll find golf courses open.
And a lot of them are doing exactly that, Rob. I think, Ives Grove was crowded over the weekend, and Pete Idle told me a lot of Illinois plates in the parking lot, and I think a lot of courses in southeastern Wisconsin are finding that to be true. It's crazy what's going on in Illinois. I mean, yeah, Cook County, some of the courses are closed. The city courses are closed, but the other ones are open. 15-minute tee times, twosomes, single rider carts. I don't know what the difference is between a twosome and a foursome. You can stand 20 feet apart as a foursome as easily as you can as a twosome. It's just strange.
Well, if we had twosomes going into stores 15 minutes apart that are open, none of us would be able to buy anything. And I don't want to think about that. And then I'll throw another one in there. Out here in California, Gary, late last week, Riverside County Board of Supervisors voted to lift the restrictions on the wearing of facial coverings, social distancing, and the restrictions on golf courses. So it's funny that when I talked to Dan Woltman from the Corn Ferry Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour player from Beaver Dam last week, I told him I would post a picture of me with a face mask on the first tee because he was glad to be, out golfing. He wasn't sure what, the restart of the Corn Ferry will look like and if he'll have to wear facial coverings at any stops or anything like that. When I told him that's what one of the requirements out here, he just about, keeled over. I mean, it's just, he couldn't imagine someone on the tee box playing with a facial covering. So here at Riverside County, that restriction's been removed. For the most part, it seems like most restrictions on golf courses in our county have been removed. Last week, Torrey Pines opened for the first time, as did many of the courses down in San Diego County. And then last night on the TV news out here, this will be of interest perhaps to Badger football fans who have parked at Brookside Golf Course for the Rose Bowl. Brookside's back open again in L.A. County, But again, LA County opened up their golf courses with the understanding that you would have to wear a facial covering. And it just looks, honestly, Gary, it just looks weird. And I think that's why subliminally I've not wanted to go back to the golf course. And this week I might. So now that we don't have to wear them here in Riverside County.
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, I suppose you would get used to playing in a face mask and face covering like you do going out shopping and doing everything else. But it sure would seem weird to me, at least the first time I played golf and having to wear something on my face. It wouldn't feel right, and it certainly wouldn't look right, especially if you have guys on tours in masks like that.
Well, it was funny because last Friday afternoon, evening, it started combing the internet because I had seen pop up on my Facebook feed something from a company that was selling Callaway golf logoed facial coverings. And boy, that'd be cool. And then I texted our colleague Jim Kelsch and said, maybe we should get one of these with Wisconsin.golf logos on it for Gary and I to wear when we cover tournaments this summer. But we're hoping that doesn't come to that. We'll have to see. Gary, as we transition here, I just want to remind our listeners that Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. Of course, the Club at Lac La Belle, located in Oconomowoc, and the semi-private golf club is going to have its grand opening on June 20th. A nine-hole loop of holes already open, and you can find out more on our website at clubatlaclabelle.com. Gary, a couple of legends in the news last week. One that we lost in West Bend golfing legend Frank Tenfell. And any of us who have had the opportunity to cover amateur golf in the state of Wisconsin probably have a Frank Tenfell story. And he came off at times as crusty, but had a soft spot. One of those guys that you just couldn't judge that book by its cover, could you?
No, yeah, you're a tremendous competitor. Everyone who played against him, Most guys say he was the most competitive person they've ever played with or against. Had a tremendous record, especially as a senior. After he turned 55, he won, I believe, 6 Wisconsin senior amateur titles and, you know, won a bunch of other tournaments and won a few big ones in his prime, too. But he never did win the State Am or the State Open. Had a couple very close calls in both of them, and is not in the Golf Hall of Fame in Wisconsin. And I have to believe if he had picked off a State Am or a State Open at some point earlier in his career, he'd be a no-brainer for the Hall of Fame. A lot of people think he still should be in anyway, but you mentioned his crustiness, and he was a highly competitive guy who could be difficult to play with, and even his friends will tell you that. So, but you know, I've interviewed him a couple times in the last few years and found him to be just a warm and fun and funny man too. You know, he had a great wit about him, and it's just too bad we lost him at age 93. He lived a good long life and won a lot of tournaments.
Hey, 1 second, Gary. Yeah, and so Frank Tenfell of West Bend passed away at the age of 93 last week in a motor scooter accident. One of the things that he used to get around. And again, a great life lived by an amateur golfing legend in the state of Wisconsin. Speaking of legends, the Wisconsin PGA last week, Gary, comes out with its player and senior player of the decade. Ryan Helmanen, the player of the year. Eddie Teresa, the senior player of the year. Both of them managed to hold off Jim Schumann, who had a great end of the decade. But especially when it came to the senior player of the decade, didn't have enough years going at the start of the decade. He wasn't old enough fast enough. And so that award goes to Eddie. Even Eddie mentioned that. But no matter what, when you're talking about those three, you're talking about a triangle of great success at all levels with those three club pros.
No doubt, Rob. You know, our section, the Wisconsin PGA section, might not stack up to some in terms of depth, quality of players, you know, numbers. The Met section, for instance, probably has, you know, dozens of really, really fine players. But when you look at the very top of the Wisconsin PGA section, and in particular, those three names you just mentioned, I think those guys stack up with anybody in any section anywhere in the country. They're all great players, and even more important, they're all really fine representatives of the game of golf, I think, in my opinion.
And Ryan Helmanen's come, you know, close to, you know, making the cut at the PGA Championship a number of times. He's fared, you know, extremely well in the National Club Pro Championship. And, you know, the same with Eddie and in the senior division, has just, you know, won everything there is to win. And again, we often look back at some of the great club pros over time, Manuel De La Torre, Steve Bull, Bob Brew, and I'm sure I'm missing a handful. You get to the end of the 70s and 80s, and you're looking at Dennis and Larry Tiziani, and then a lot of the guys that came through, you know, for a cup of coffee and dominated for a year or two, and then, you know, went on to, you know, other things. The section is a storied section. As you mentioned, maybe not quite with the reputation nationally of some of the others in some of the other golfing areas of the country. But, man, we've been treated to some great golfers. And then in turn, I think one of the strengths is, you know, especially when you look at, you know, Ryan Helminen, Eddie Chiaresa, Jim Schumann, you know, they've also been very strong in teaching the game. And so much of their legacy lives on in the kids and the and really some of the top amateurs that they've tutored over the years as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Rob. And, you know, I think Eddie's far from finished. Eddie's going to be 60 here in a few weeks. But he told me that he just switched for the first time. He changed his shaft and his driver from stiff to regular. He said he's given into the TrackMan numbers, and he's abandoning the macho that he has to hit a stiff driver. He's been pretty healthy over the years, and I would look for him to continue his success in the senior ranks. And then Ryan told me that, you know, he was in Tucson when I called him. He's got a condo down there, and his dad works down there at Tucson National and as a starter. And Ryan told me when I talked to him that day, he had shot 65 at Tucson National earlier in the day. So I think he's ready to go too as soon as we get some tournaments going in our state, Rob.
Well, that's right. And we were supposed to have one today. We'll get to that in a minute because you and I were going to spend part of this podcast talking about the fact that we're going to have to, about a 3 or 4 week stretch here, we're going to have to talk about tournaments that should have been played but have fallen victim to the coronavirus crisis. One more thing. When we talked last week, speaking of the section, we mentioned that Steve Howe and his wife, Carolyn Barnett Howe, back-to-back aces down in Florida. You were able to talk to them. That was one heck of a story. It gained some traction nationally. And it also had the quote of the year from Carolyn Barnett Howe. She said, "I have never been an athlete that's pointed to the sky. I've always thought God was busy dealing with more weighty issues. That being said, I do acknowledge that he is in control. I think he was bored the other day and said to the angels, 'Hold my beer.' It was certainly fun." She thinks that there might have been some divine intervention in those back-to-back holes in one, both with 7 irons down there in Florida. That was a riot. But that's Carolyn.
Yeah, that was a fun story. And what's really interesting about it is that, you know, there have been, you know, countless whole great hole-in-one stories over the years. Golf's been played a long time, and a lot of it is people going out and playing and making holes in one that we never find out about. So I'm sure that a husband and wife have had back-to-back hole-in-ones on back-to-back swings. But what made Carolyn and Steve's unusual is that at the same tee box and the same club, 158 yards, 7-iron, because Carolyn's a very fine player, obviously. So I don't know how many times that's happened in golf history, Rob, but I can't imagine many.
No, I can't either. We'll have another hole-in-one story this week. I had the pleasure of talking to Miranda Kotlowski. She is a top five finisher last fall at the WIAA State Girls Golf Championship for Stoughton High School. She's headed to Colorado Mesa this fall. She's had two holes in one at Stoughton Country Club in the last 10 days. And wow. Both of them, the first time it was a very busy day at the golf course. So she was started on the back, made the turn to the front, got paired with people she had never met before. So that obviously she impressed that group. And then the second time she played through a group of ladies and on Ladies Day out at the club, and the women waved her up on a par three as is, you know, the practice. And she hits and she gets up there and couldn't find the ball. She said to the ladies, "Did you see that ball go in?" They said, "Oh, no, we weren't paying attention." So they walk up to the hole together, and sure enough, it was in the hole. So and the
no
hole
way.
Did, yes. And they all cheered. The both holes had swim noodles in them, so you could kind of see the ball, you know, just barely over the top of the cup there. So another one coming your way this week. But Gary, you know, you talk about Ryan Helminen and Eddie Chiaresa, Jim Schumann, a lot of these club pro guys. You know, one of our favorite events to cover every year is
when the club pro guys, the mini tour guys, and just about, you know, the college golfers, the, a lot of the top high school golfers get together for the U.S. Open local qualifier. And that was to have been today at Hidden Glen in Cedarburg, and not going off. We still don't know really, Gary Dewey, if they're going to have any type of qualifying process for the U.S. Open, which will now be played the week before the Ryder Cup in September. But that's the first one that we're going to miss. How do you feel about that?
I really miss it, Rob. I think I've covered U.S. Open local qualifying for about 20 straight years. It's one of my favorite days, although, you know, today would have been an interesting weather day. But last year, Rob, I remember back to last year, it was at Wild Rock, and it was honestly in Wisconsin Dells. It was one of the toughest playing condition days I've ever seen. It was probably, it had to be in the low 40s and raining horizontally. And Austin Kanzorski shot a 70 in that weather. I went out and tried to follow him in a cart, Rob, and after two holes, I couldn't hold on to the steering wheel anymore. My hands were so cold. I had to go in literally. I was soaked to the bone. I don't know how he shot 70 in those conditions, but it's always a fun day covering those local qualifiers.
It sure is. So we'll continue to monitor, figure out what they're going to do to try to get the field established for the U.S. Open. One of the great things is that anybody with a qualifying handicap of, you know, can at least enter the local. And, you know, there's always that dream. And I'll remember speaking of club pros, David Roche out of Milwaukee, you know, led the U.S. Open one time after going through the qualifying stages. And for a time on opening day, he and Mark Wilson did a Instagram live video for the Wisconsin PGA section a couple weeks ago. They're going to do another one here in a couple days. And they talked about that. And, you know, one of David's 15 minutes of fame there. But again, another guy who's gone on to do great things in the section and is one of the most accomplished teaching professionals in the state working with young people. And so, again, sad that no U.S. Open local qualifying this year. A couple other events also fallen by the wayside. The first member series event of the season for the WSGA was supposed to be played at the Irish Course at Whistling Straits on the 19th. That will not be played. The four-ball championship up at Lake Arrowhead on the Pines and Lakes courses will not be played this year. And a couple more USGA qualifiers. The U.S. Senior Open qualifier at Washington County. Obviously, no Senior Open this year, so no Senior Open qualifying. And likewise, the two junior championships have been called off, and they were supposed to have been qualifying on June the 18th at Watertown Country Club. So at this point, Gary, the first event on the schedule that has not yet been canceled, the state mother-child, again, previously an event run through the under the umbrella of the Wisconsin Women's State Golf Association, that has now been folded into the WSGA auspices in terms of running the tournament, and all things permitting, June 7th, the state mother-child, so it could be mother-son, mother-daughter, whatever it might be, will be played at Massachusetts Golf Club up in Berlin. So let's hope that takes place, because I'd like to see some tournament golf again.
Yeah, that's less than a month away now. Let's hope that we have some tournament golf in June, starting with that event you just mentioned, and hopefully we'll get back to a sort of a semi-normal schedule and fill in with those tournaments. And some of the ones that were canceled, maybe we'll come back in some form. But you're right, Rob. I just want to cover some golf. The weather's going to start warming up now, and hopefully we'll be able to get out there and cover some golf tournaments live.
We do have a live golf tournament coming up Sunday, TaylorMade Driving Relief. That's the event that's going to pit Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson against Ricky Fowler and Matt Wolf. I believe I had that group right. That will be on Sunday down at the Seminole Golf Club. And I'm not sure. That's not pay-per-view. That's going to be somewhere we can all watch it, isn't it, Gary? You know?
Yeah, I believe that's network coverage. And Seminole, I mean, that's – I'm going to tune in, Rob, because I've never seen Seminole, and I would venture to guess that 99% of our listeners haven't, if not more, haven't seen it either. You know, one of those exclusive private clubs in South Florida where Ben Hogan practiced every year before the Masters. It's got a mystique about it. And I'm looking forward to seeing the golf course as much as I am seeing some competition on it.
And I know Tiger versus Phil, too, with the quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, also coming up. But the first official event on the PGA Tour that is supposed to be played is the Charles Schwab Challenge, June 11th through the 14th at Colonial in Fort Worth, Texas. And of course, that's created a little bit of controversy. That's an invitational event. And so there's also a Corn Ferry event that week as well. And Vijay Singh making some headlines because he is going to play in the newly minted Corn Ferry Challenge at the TPC Sawgrass. He lives in at Sawgrass, so it's right in his backyard. It's on the Dyes Valley course. Your thoughts, Gary, on senior tour players coming back to play on the Corn Ferry Tour?
It's really interesting, Rob. It's an interesting debate. I saw that Phil Mickelson took to Twitter to defend his old pal, and I say that lightly because they're not very close, really, Vijay. Phil said he's earned the right. He's got status. He's not breaking any rule. He can play in the event as long as it's if he's not qualified to play in a PGA, eligible to play in a PGA Tour event the same week, he can play in a Corn Ferry event. So he's not doing anything wrong technically, but is it the right thing to do? I say no. Vijay's, you know, won major championships and a bunch of tournaments and a lot of money, and he certainly doesn't need a $3,500 check for finishing 28th on the Corn Ferry Tour. I think that's meant to be a developmental tour. He's got his tour to play on the Champions Tour, and he can still play PGA Tour events whenever he wants. So whenever he's eligible for them. So I say it's, you know, technically he can do it, but should he do it? I say no. How do you feel?
There's one element to this where I kind of give him the benefit of the doubt, and that is that he is not eligible for the invitational event. And again, a lot of these guys, you know, obviously the inflation has really skewed the career money list a little bit. And these guys that are coming on today are making money quicker than a lot of the golfers who have cycled off the PGA Tour. So that's kind of impacted their status in terms of these regular events. So that's one thing. But I think the biggest thing, Gary, that I see is that, the Senior Tour, the PGA Tour champions not getting going until July 31st at the Alley Challenge in Grand Blanc, Michigan, at the old Buick Open site, and with Jerry Kelly as the defending champ, by the way. But that's still a good 2 months away, and that's a long time to shake off the rust. Now, understand though, they did that to try to protect the oldest tour of golfers, the Champions Tour. And their health and well-being, I believe. And on top of the fact that a number of the events before that, the Senior Open Championship at Sunningdale in England, the U.S. Senior Open, and then the MasterCard Japan Championship, all three right after the AmFam Championship that was to have been played in Madison. I think they didn't want to bring that tour back too quickly. But clearly there's a lot of guys on that tour, Gary, that are chomping the bit to play. I think maybe we might have overshot, when we should resume the Senior Tour. But I think they wanted to get some regular events in just to make sure that everything goes off okay before they got to the Senior events, and make sure that everything is still, good to go. That as a country, we're trending in the right direction with this virus. And again, you can't fault a guy like Vijay Singh for wanting to play.
No, I don't fault him for wanting to play. I just and you're right, the Champions Tour starts later, and part of the reason is because, I think if we're going to be honest here, those guys are ages 50 and above, and when you get up to the upper 50s and 60s is I think when we've seen statistically that the COVID-19 and coronavirus starts becoming, really dangerous. So by all means, wait for the Champions Tour. That's fine. In my opinion, it's just a bad optic. Here's a guy who's won major championships, certainly doesn't need the money, and is just doing it to keep his game tuned, to get some reps in. But I just don't think it's a good optic. I just think that tour should be for guys who are trying to make it to the PGA Tour, not for guys who are already, in the Hall of Fame.
And especially this year, and I know we're extending the Corn Ferry Tour over two seasons, but again, you never know the way that these stories have been told on that tour. You never know when that 144th or 156th player in the field is actually going to win the event. And you just, again, you hate to see somebody We've had the same discussion, you know, with Steph Curry getting exemptions into these fields, Tony Romo on the PGA Tour. Is that the right thing? You know, I think they're two different things. One is back, you know, they did that back in the day when there were spectators, you know, that they were trying to draw to the tournament.
Right.
You know, this is just simply trying to get the tour back up and started. And I think for the most part, to answer your question, Gary, I would agree with you. I think there's other places that Vijay Singh could play that won't take opportunities away from up and coming players who, you know, who really need that opportunity. So we'll see where that goes. Let me see here. You know, otherwise, you know, we're still about a month out from the first PGA Tour events. And any idea, Gary, that, from what you know as to how those will look without fans? And I understand, you know, maybe with far fewer media than we're used to seeing at events as well.
Yeah, I got a communique from Ron Green, the president of the Golf Writers Association of America. Rob passed it on to you, so I know you've read it.
Yep.
It looks like, you know, the first few events anyway, they're going to limit to 30 to 35 media members. That sounds like a lot, but you take into account, you know, the PGA Tour's broadcast partners, Golf Channel and whoever else is there, plus Sirius Radio and local media. And really, I think that's going to leave a very limited number of media spots for other publications around the country and other media outlets around the country. So they're going to be, everything's going to be social distance, and, you know, they're going to take all those precautions. But I wonder, other than TV, how those events are actually going to be covered and people are going to read about them. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of the pressure is going to fall to the PGA Tour media staff. And in imposing this, I think they recognize the fact that, you know, it doesn't remove the fact that there are a lot of stories that are unique to certain areas of the country. You know, Brad Faxon and Billy Andrade have always had a great following in the northeastern part of the country. Jerry Kelly, Steve Stricker in the, you know, in our part of the, you know, the country. You know, the crew from Arizona, the golfers that have come up through the ranks in Southern California. And I think it's going to require a lot of work on their part to make sure that those interests are still accounted for, whether it be through phone interviews, whether it be through transcripts, whatever it might be, where we can get some sort of semblance as to what those golfers think, not only of the round that they've played, but the conditions in which they've played it without spectators. For a lot of them, they haven't had to you know, that dynamic in a professional event since their days on the mini tours. And I can remember when my mom and dad went and watched Steve Stricker play in a Canadian Tour event in Windsor, Canada, and said it was the two of them, maybe Steve's parents, and that was about it. And you know, it just it's gonna feel a lot like that for these guys as they sit there and watch you know, or try to do their business without anybody cheering you know, a good shot near a hole, or you know, maybe even, you know, clipping a spectator is with a drive that goes offline. So it's going to be weird, but we're looking forward to golf returning as we move forward. Also moving forward, Gary, as we wrap up the podcast, some stories coming up this week. Got one that's being posted right now. Emmett Herb, talked to him a couple weeks ago, and he is returning to St. Thomas, Minnesota for one semester at this point. And St. Thomas has a great Division III golf team ranked in the top 15 in the country, and Emmett Herb is ranked fourth, I believe, among individuals in NCAA Division III. Lost out on the chance to play at the NCAA Championships, which would have been this week. Again, another tournament that was supposed to be played and will not. And with that extra eligibility, he's coming back, and he'll play in the fall, wrap up his 12 credits, and then he plans to turn professional early in 2021. Gary, we don't often see someone coming back to play one semester. I ran the scenario by him. Emmett, you could help your team get to the national tournament and then not play in it. Are you okay with that? And he was. There's, you know, the you know, in Division III, you're paying your own way to, you know, with tuition and the like, room and board. But let's not forget, Gary, the seniors that are graduating, there are some of them that do want to get on with their lives. And as great as college is, you know, not all of them want to stay around for an entire fifth year.
That's true, Rabbi. You know, just another story from UWM. It's not a golf story, but it's an interesting one. There's a distance runner named Matt Brooks who at redshirt senior had exhausted all his eligibility for the outdoor season. So he just hung around just to run one race in the spring, the 10K at the Horizon League Championships. And that, of course, got pulled out from under him. And so he hung around and trained all year and won't get a chance to compete. And we see that in college sports. We're seeing that obviously everywhere. But interesting story you have coming on Ammon.
And then we've got the story on Matt Tolan, former state amateur champion out of Eau Claire. He's out at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. And he will be, we'll write that story here for later in the week. And he will be coming back and starting grad school. He never thought he'd stay around Vermilion. He never thought he'd be going to grad school. He'll be doing both to get another year of eligibility. And again, you know, with these, you know, the demand on spots in the mini tour events, Gary, a lot of these guys with plans to turn professional, you know, it returning to college for one more year as we kind of, you know, recalibrate, you know, the golf landscape at the professional level, I think makes a lot of sense. And so that's what Matt Tolan is going to do. Mentioned earlier, we got the hole-in-one story coming. Another story we like to do every year is we look at the WIA tournament assignments as they come out. They were made recently for girls golf, assuming it will be played as scheduled in the fall. And they just passed, Gary, some WIA Board of Control legislation about a month or so ago that is going to go to a 60-40 split. 60% of the schools playing girls golf will be assigned to Division I, 40% to Division II. So that's going to result in a number of schools that were in Division I this year dropping down in Division II. I'm writing about a program that one of two that's just starting up this year at Green Bay NEW Lutheran, NEW standing for Northeast Wisconsin Lutheran, and the story of Faith Flynn. She's a girl that's played on the boys' team the last 3 years. This was to have been her third year. Obviously, the season canceled. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic canceled the boys' golf season this spring, she had worked along with her father, who's now the coach of the New Lutheran boys' team and the athletic director, to get girls' golf started. One of the other coaches in the conference in which she plays for boys' golf thought that she could really, you know, make an impact in girls' golf, and in turn, that may, you know, earn her some attention from the college ranks. So she went out and recruited, after recruiting four boys to play with her last year and keep the program going at New Lutheran. She went out this year and recruited three girls, working on a fourth to get five for a full team for girls' golf this fall. So that story coming this week. And along with, you know, where all the schools we placed for the 2020 tournament, assuming, Gary, we're going to have a 2020 tournament. At this point, I like the chances of amateur golf being played this summer. I'm a little bit uneasy as we close out the podcast here about college sports this fall and what I'm seeing. Mark Emmerich, the NCAA president, made some comments over the weekend that if students are not on campus, sports will not go on in their normal format. I don't know if you saw that, if you have a reaction to that, but to me, that it kind of gives me a nervous pit in my stomach, to be frank.
It certainly does, Rob. Yeah, that's disconcerting to hear those words. But you know, and I hope when the NCAA looks at sports, I hope they look at, they don't throw a blanket over all sports, because obviously football and the way football is constructed and practiced and the way games are in huge stadiums, it's much different than golf or cross country. So I don't know if you can throw a blanket over all sports, but of course, if there's no one on campus, it would be very difficult to go ahead with sports. So, Rob, I'm hoping that the next few weeks to a month or two here, we get a handle on this, and that we see the curve flatten considerably on the pandemic, and that we sort of get back to doing what we've always done in a different way, of course. But I'm certainly hoping for that we see sports this fall at colleges and universities and professional leagues also.
I agree, and I kind of feel like our podcast, Gary, we've kind of become spectators in the balcony here, looking over the landscape of a lot of different things, waiting for it to change, and we'll continue to do that. We really don't have anything else to talk about at the very moment, but it's fascinating stuff. It's historical, to say the least, and we'll keep hoping that we have something better to talk about, you know, quite soon. But I think being able to, you know, kind of look and analyze as to what might happen, what might not happen. We kind of don't have any other choice at this point, do we?
No, we certainly don't. And it's been interesting covering golf from this perspective of not knowing what the future holds, because it has been so fluid, and there are different stories that are cropping up weekly, if not daily, about how things are being handled. We've already talked about golf courses opening and carts and driving ranges, and things are going to keep happening and changing as we go forward here. So there'll be no lack of stories for us to work on Wisconsin.golf, even though it's a completely different world.
That's for sure. Well, we'll keep doing that. Gary, appreciate the time this week, and we'll evaluate the landscape again next week. How does that sound?
That sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members alike. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. Remember, the semi-private golf club's grand opening will be June 20th. There's currently a 9-hole loop available for play right now. You can find out more on its website at club@laclabelle.com. This has been Talking.Golf. We'll talk to you again next week.